From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. And we have a great show ahead for you today. We're looking ahead to the feast day of Our Lady of Good Success. Candelaria is the feast day celebrated around the world, but specifically in Ecuador, they celebrate in a big way Our Lady of Good Success. And I've been there for that feast day. It's quite a thing to see, the people processing in the streets with candles honoring Mary under this title. We'll also be looking back just a little bit. Earlier this month, we had the death anniversary of Francis Irving Houle, who is a servant of God on the path to sainthood. We'll be talking with Deacon Terry Saunders about how his cause is moving along. Check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday on EWTN television. On the 5th of February at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, They Might Be Saints, The Martyrs of La Florida will be airing, and that's the extraordinary faith of the Spanish priests and Appalachian natives that were killed while evangelizing and defending their Catholic faith in Florida. So check that one out on Wednesday, the 5th of February at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. My other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, the next episode airs on Saturday, February 15th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be looking at Genazzano in Italy, and I'll be looking at one of history's most mysterious, miraculous images, which appeared in 1467 with a beautiful fresco of the Virgin Mary and Christ Child being revealed descending from the clouds, and I will be investigating that story. So check that out on the 15th of February at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Genazzano. And for those people who are interested in traveling to Italy, you can join me on a pilgrimage. I'm going to be going to Italy next August, July 28th through August 4th, to be specific. I'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome. I always like to go to these places of saints and miracles, and Italy does not disappoint. We'll be seeing Marian apparition sites and visiting the Duomo in Milan, visiting Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where they house the Shroud of Turin. And we'll be walking in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and seeing the places where St. John Bosco had his famous visions there in Turin. And of course, in Florence, we'll go to the place of many great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello. We'll be seeing the David, as well as numerous other works of art. But we'll be going to the site of the apparition of the Virgin Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites there around the Vatican, and finishing with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. We'll be excited to do that. So check that one out, pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. That's July 28th through August 4th, coming up soon. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Anna Michelotti from Italy, and also the 365 Days with Mary Project. We've got the Paramithia Kaiko in Cyprus from 1997. The question of the week, how are stigmatics officially recognized by the Catholic Church? And the Might Be Saint of the Day, or the Miracle of the Day, excuse me, is the 70th Miracle of Lourdes. So we'll be looking back at that famous case. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And there is a new potential miracle that's being connected to the saintly businessman Enrique Ernesto Shaw. Now, a medical team has completed their evaluation of a potential miracle attributed to the intercession of Enrique Shaw, who is an Argentine businessman, and the cause for canonization has passed this major hurdle. So according to the Catholic News Agency, an alleged miracle attributed to his intercession passed the medical stage and will now be evaluated by a commission of theologians for the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints. And Pope Francis has already declared Enrique Shaw as a venerable in 2021, recognizing his practice of heroic virtue. And the Dicastery still needs to review the miracle before the cause can move any further. And if it is approved, he will very quickly be beatified. And for those people who do not know who Enrique Shaw, Enrique had a few friends, had gone to Buenos Aires a few times They were given leave. It was on one of these visits that he met Sarah, and they fell in love and were married in 1943. They'd have 9 children, and one became a priest. Enrique taught them all the importance of the rosary and made a point of taking them to church every week. He set a fine example as a Catholic father. At the end of World War II, Enrique started his own business, and he established the Christian Association of Business Executives, and he did this with help from Archbishop Joseph Cardin of Belgium, who would go on to become a cardinal. And Enrique became a prolific writer, publishing many books dealing with justice and honor in the workplace, and he promoted intense evangelizing aimed at the business class in Argentina and Latin America. His goal was to be Christ in the business world, and he was one of the founders of the Christian Family Movement in Argentina and president of the Argentine Catholic Action League. And so that is the story about Enrique Ernesto Shaw, with some luck, you might say, or some success, they will approve that miracle there in Rome, and he will move very quickly from blessed to saint. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And last week we had an interview about the little Cajun saint, Charlene Richard, who, if canonized, would become the youngest American saint in history. And the question from last week was, who currently is the youngest American saint at the time of their death? And that answer was St. Kateri Tekakwitha, who died at the age of 24. And writing in with the right answer was Matthew DeViller. He wrote in and he noted that St. Kateri, you might say, was born in the location that later became America, in New York, America was not yet a sovereign location at that time. So we give you bonus points, Matthew, for clarifying about St. Kateri Tekakwitha, but that is the right answer. People who are tuning into They Might Be Saints this week, as I mentioned, will be tuning into an episode of They Might Be Saints about the martyrs of La Florida. So there's numerous Appalachian natives and Spanish priests from Florida who are on the path to sainthood as servants of God. But there is another state, not just Florida, in which they are moving forward as well on the path to sainthood. The trivia question for this week is, name the other location of martyrs in the Southeast whose members there are going on to sainthood. See if you think you know that answer, one of them in the prize. Send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the one with the right answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. For a lot of Catholics and some who don't like taking down their Christmas decorations early, that would be me in my house. We have the our Christmas tree up all the way till February 2nd, and that's coming right around the corner. But more importantly, that's the feast day of Candelaria, or the feast day of Our Lady of Good Success in Ecuador. I had the blessing to be able to be there in person to participate in that candlelight procession that honored Our Lady under the title of Our Lady of Good Success, or Nuestra Señora de Buen Suceso, in Quito, in Ecuador. And it was truly a beautiful experience. And I'm so excited to be talking today with Jim Valois. He's the author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Message for Our Time, and with a focus on Our Lady of Good Success. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining us on today's program.
Well, thank you, Michael, for having me.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you back. And I think this is a Marian devotion that many Americans are not familiar with. Of course, we always have our big three, Lourdes, Fatima, Guadalupe, but there are a handful of others that people are familiar with. But Our Lady of Good Success is a fairly recognized apparition by the Catholic Church, yet Americans don't know about it. Why do you think that is?
That's a, you know, a good statement, because I think there's a lot of books written in Spanish that deal with the topic, but not a lot of books are written in English. And that's why I think a lot of Americans know very little about Our Lady of Good Success of the Purification.
Yeah, and it's fairly interesting in the sense that it occurred in a time period when the Catholic Church was just sort of getting its processes all straightened out for the investigation of Marian apparitions and miracles. We might look at the Council of Trent from 1545 to 1563, where they solidified some of those procedures. So this is an apparition that falls very early, at least in the time of when this process could be applied. But for those people who don't know, tell us a little bit. How did this? What is the backstory? What is the background behind the Conceptionist Sisters there in Quito in this apparition of Mary, Our Lady of Good Success?
You know, Michael, what happened was, there were several nuns that were going to Ecuador when it was still a colony, and what happened was they went there to set up a foundation in the city of St. Francis, and which is now Quito, Ecuador. And in that situation of a cloistered convent, Our Lady appeared to Mother Mariana and began to reveal to her things that would be directly applied or applicable and directly related to the 19th and 20th century. And she also spoke about things that happened, like would happen 200 and some years in the future. But the prophecy, a lot of it is relates to our time. So it's very, very pertinent, and people should learn about it, because it's a very encouraging and good message to understand what is going to happen, what is happening from heaven's point of view.
Absolutely. We're talking with Jim Valois, the author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time, and we're talking today about Our Lady of Good Success. And you mentioned, Jim, some of these prophecies that are said to have come true, and I think that always catches people's attention. There are, when it comes to private revelation, oftentimes these prophecy is built into these, and people are curious with Fatima secrets and otherwise what is coming true, or what sort of establishes this as a true event. What are some of the prophecies related to Our Lady of Good Success that we might be able to say, yeah, that is something that came true?
You know, there was a great prophecy which Our Lady said to Mother Mariana that there would be this great Catholic president who would have the palm of martyrdom, and he would die right in the center square where it's right near the convent there, and it's near the presidential palace. And I was in that square, and, you know, as a Protestant evangelical at the time, and, you know, they told me about this great president that had been around 1860. He had three terms. He was elected and reelected because he was not only great, but he dedicated the entire country to the Sacred Heart of Our Lord. And so Mary pinpointed this exactly, that this would come, and it was about 200 years in the future from when she told Mother Mariana that this would happen. So I put it in the book so that people would realize we should take these prophecies serious, because a big prophecy about a Catholic president in Ecuador has already come to pass. And and he fit the bill, and he died as a martyr, you know, exactly as Our Lady had said, in the very square where she said he would die. And so everything has come true exactly as was foretold.
Amazing. We're talking today with Jim Valois, the author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time. We're talking about Our Lady of Good Success today, ahead of her feast day on February 2nd. And in addition to Marian apparitions received by Mother Mariana, We also have the story of a miraculous statue. Tell us a little bit about the statue, and can people even see that statue today?
Yes, the statue is taken on procession, and it's interesting. Our Lady asked that a specific artist, a sculptor, who was handicapped in some capacities, and he was asked by Our Lady. Our Lady spoke to Mother Mariana and asked that this particular artist be chosen, and that's the artist that was chosen. And then my nephew, he felt led to do a painting of Our Lady of Good Success of the Purification, and he painted a painting of Our Lady. And it's interesting because he's also handicapped in his hands, and I just found it to be interesting how he did that, and that he didn't know I was doing this book on Our Lady of Good Success, and he did it for the book. Well, he didn't know it was going to be a book at the time, but he ended up doing that, and it was really powerful because Our Lady specifically chose this artist to sculptor this painting, or this, not painting, statue. And to make a long story short, what happened was it was not finished, and the artist left the area to go and get some paint, better paints for the final touches of the work. And at that time, miraculously, angels came and completed the process, and we could see this statue. It's taken in procession, and we can actually see it down in Ecuador when it's taken out in procession, which is coming up here very shortly. And so that's the statue was built and created to be a sign of God's protection over the convent. And through many turmoils and many difficulties, the mercy of God was evident in protecting the sisters and their convent from many different attempts by the government to close it down and evict the sisters. And I gotta say, the mercy of God is there for all of us, that if we just call upon the Lord's mercy, he'll help us in our various difficulties and struggles.
We're talking today with Jim Valois, the author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time. And when we talk about Our Lady of Good Success, maybe we're talking about, the dates are a little bit fuzzy in my head about when all these events happen, but perhaps some are dated to as early as 1594. And so we're dealing with events that happened centuries and centuries ago. But it seems to be that your book, Our Lady's Prophecies, points out that these messages might be applicable not just centuries ago, but even for our world today. How do you see that connecting?
Well, one of the reasons I say that is Our Lady said that, the prophecy, she pinpointed that in the ninth, what would happen in the 19th and 20th century, and of course, spilling into our century too. This changing of customs. She said the passions would erupt, and the customs would be changed. And for the first time in history, the custom on marriage has been changed in our country, and in other countries in the world. And there's other customs that have been changed dramatically because of this eruption of passions. And I wanted to mention that. Our Lady specifically talked about the beginning of this in the 20th century would start right at the shortly after the middle of the 20th century. And that's when, of course, prayer was taken out of the schools, and the sexual revolution happened, and many different things happened in the 60s that have led to the problems that we have in the new sexual revolution, which is happening in the 21st century. So I think it's really interesting as you look at the prophecies. I put the actual prophecies in the book so people could see them. But Our Lady did this as, you know, an act of mercy, really, to all of us, to be able to see what's coming and what is here, and you know, how we can take proper steps to bring about a civil society and bring about changes that are good and healthy, and will strengthen, you know, strengthen the church and strengthen the society that we're in. And so it's not just a prophecy about, like, it's not a prophecy, really, I consider not a prophecy about doom and gloom, but it's a prophecy that shows us how to, what is going to happen and what we can do to bring about good changes in our world. And that's what the prophecy, I think, is trying to bring out to us.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Jim Valois, for joining us on today's program. The name of his book is Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time. It's available from Sophia Institute Press, and it's available anywhere Catholic books are sold and on Amazon and otherwise. We're so grateful to you, Jim, for you talking to us today, and we encourage people to check out his various articles on the internet, some recent ones coming out about modernism on Catholic Exchange. So we're going to be looking forward to those from Jim Valois as well. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael, for having me on again.
God bless. That was Jim Valois, author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time, putting the focus this week on Our Lady of Good Success, whose feast day is upon us on February 2nd. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Yeah, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting the questions in my email inbox. I've got a pretty strange inbox, you might imagine. But I also like answering them the questions in person. And I give talks around the country, maybe 20 in a given year. And I travel around to different parishes or conferences. And I give talks for about 45 minutes about Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions or how the church investigates the supernatural. And then I open it up to questions. And so and that's always the fun part for me, just hearing what people are thinking about. But if you'd like to have me speak at your parish, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab and send me a message that way. And maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area sometime soon. And this week's question was a good one. This is a tricky one. How are stigmatics officially recognized by the Catholic Church? And it's a good question because I think that the first thing that needs to be pointed out is that the focus normally is on how the Church rules out stigmatics. So these are cases where various people, through one form or another, are exhibiting the wounds of Christ on their body in a physical way. And numerous saints throughout history, several hundred saints, have had this phenomena. And, of course, we can rule it out as a psychosomatic phenomena because through hypnosis, the creating of these wounds as a mind over body sort of effort by a psychologist or otherwise, and we can rule it out as being something that happens to crazy people. But they do have cases where the wounds are created through implements, people cutting holes in their body, unfortunately. And so when there does seem to be proof of a stigmata that isn't authentic, it isn't from God, and they can see infection or the festering of a wound that is a real clear tip-off, or it doesn't heal. In the cases of the true stigmatics, the wounds come and go, and no scar is left. And so we it's very easy to tell the fake cases. So in the cases of false stigmata, you will see the church issuing a statement shutting them down, so to speak, a cease and desist order to stop portraying that they do have the wounds of Christ. So we see far more statements from the church of a negative nature. And the cases that persist, where people are walking around with the stigmata, where there is no church statement, in some ways, that's sort of a de facto approval, in the sense that if the church knows about it and hasn't shut it down, then they're okay with it, and it's some sort of allowing it to happen. Now, this isn't really tantamount to an approval in an official way. When we look at Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles or weeping statues, we see very formal statements from the church making declarations of supernaturality. But there have been a couple cases, but maybe only a couple. St. Francis and St. Teresa of Avila might be two of the only cases that we see a formal statement coming from Rome establishing their stigmata as authentic. Perhaps local bishops would give statements on their own, allowing devotion to that saint or acknowledging their stigmata in one form or another, but the very official statements, perhaps we only have two in history. That's St. Francis of Assisi and St. Teresa of Avila. So thanks so much for your question. How are stigmata officially recognized by the Catholic Church? And that's a great question. We have a new documentary coming out about the stigmata, and we'll be addressing that in the coming months. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, where we look at the Marian devotion of the days that lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, or Fatima, May 13th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion from all around the world that lines up exactly to each day of the calendar year. So for February 1st, we have the Panagia Paramithia. That's from Kiko in Cyprus in the year 1997. And the story goes that both figures, Virgin and Child, were seen to be weeping by a novice monk on the icon of Panagia Paramithia, the All Holy Consoler in Kiko Monastery in Cyprus on February 1st, 1997. The tears were flowing down the faces, were observed for a month by many people, both monks and faithful. A 14th century copy of the one in Vatopedi in Monastery on Mount Athos, the icon was originally in the Monastery of the Virgin of Helicon, 3 miles north, abandoned around the year 1800 and now in ruins. And the icon is located near Kiko Tiosa, and it's a famous wonder-working icon at that Kiko Monastery, believed in pious tradition to have been painted by St. Luke. And of course, we hear him having painted many icons. And the tears were interpreted by the abbot and archbishop to be a call from God for repentance. And so that's the 365 Days with Mary for today, February 1st, the Panagia Paramithia, from Kiko in Cyprus. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week, where we talk about a miracle that happened on the day's date or was commemorated on the day's date. And we, for today, February 1st, we have the 70th miracle of Lourdes, the famous site of Marian apparitions to St. Bernadette Subru, the 14-year-old girl who had 18 visions of the Virgin Mary and dug in the ground and unveiled this spring of water that people for centuries have gone to and bathed in or washed in. So on February 1st, 2018, the Catholic Church officially recognized the 70th miracle associated with the Marian Shrine of Our Lady of Lourdes in France. And this miracle involves Sister Bernadette Morillot, a French nun who had been wheelchair-bound due to spinal complications since 1980. And after participating in a blessing for the sick at Lourdes in 2008, she experienced an immediate and complete healing, and allowing her to walk and discontinue any pain medications or devices. And after a thorough investigation, the church declared her healing miraculous on the date of February 1st, and that is today's date. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week, where we talk about those things related to people on the path to sainthood. And five Franciscans from Spain, known as Georgia Martyrs, they have their martyrdom between September 14th and September 17th, 1597. Pope Francis has signed a decree recognizing their martyrdom on January 27th. He's formally recognized that these five Franciscan missionaries ministering in what is now the U.S. state of Georgia were killed in Odium Fidei out of hatred for their faith. And by signing this decree in the sainthood cause for the Georgia martyrs, the Pope cleared the way for their beatification, although no date for the ceremony was not announced immediately. So we will be having some new blesseds here from the United States. So exciting news that those martyrs are being recognized. Check out the post on my Facebook page for They Might Be Saints. You can find out more about this story about the Georgia martyrs. And for those people who are interested in the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Anna Michelotti, her feast day is, her memorial is today. Anna's father died when she was very young, and though she grew up in poverty, her family always had time to care for her, those worse than themselves. She studied with the Sisters of St. Charles in Lyon in France, and following the death of her mother and brother, Anna entered the novitiate of the Sisters of Lyon in 1863, taking the name Sister Giovanna Francesca of the Visitation. The congregation was dissolved in 1871, and Sister Giovanna lived for a while with her father's family, and she founded the Little Servants of the Sacred Heart of Jesus to care for the sick poor. The servants continue their good work today. And she was born in 1843, and she died in 1888 of natural causes, and her relics are with the Little Servants Mother House in Versalace in Turin. And she was declared venerable in 1966 by Paul VI, and also declared blessed November 1st by Paul VI as well. And she's today's Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Anna Michelotti. With one more miracle, she will become Saint Anna. And for those people interested in They Might Be Saints this week, check out the Martyrs of La Florida, the extraordinary faith of the Spanish priests and Appalachian natives that were killed while evangelizing and defending their Catholic faith in La Florida. That's Wednesday, February 5th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at an interview with the president moderator, Deacon Terry Saunders, from the Cause for Canonization for Francis Irving Houle. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that we love talking about saints, and specifically American saints, and even more specifically, future American saints, those people on the path to sainthood. And perhaps we have as many as 100 people throughout the United States who have either are starting along that path as servants of God, or who have been canonized saints. So in one of those cases, we see coming from Michigan. There's another case that we've spoken, of course, about Venerable Bishop Berriga of Marquette, Michigan. But we also have another one from the UP, and that is Francis Irving Houle. And we're so excited to be talking today with the president moderator of this cause for Francis Irving Houle, and that is Deacon Terry Saunders. Welcome to the program today, Deacon.
Oh, my pleasure to speak with you again, Michael, and always to speak about my friend Irving Houle, the servant of God.
Now, this is I know this is an exciting time for you personally as we move ahead on this canonization cause with Francis Irving Houle being a servant of God, that being the first of four steps, servant of God, venerable, blessed, and then saint in that sainthood process. Tell us a little bit. Many people do not know with him, with his cause just sort of getting underway. Who was the man, Francis Irving Houle?
Well, let's see. Irving was born almost 100 years ago in a small unincorporated area of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And he was born into a large family. He had he had five brothers and one sister, and mother and father. Well, they were a very religious and prayerful people who took care of many people. In fact, Irv told me during the Depression years, there wasn't anybody that walked by their home that didn't leave, or knocked on the door that didn't leave without a sandwich or a biscuit or something that his mother would prepare. And they lived on 40 acres in a farm, and they kind of kept themselves going. He told me that his dad made about $44 a month, and you know, so we're talking nine people to take care of. And they did it by cutting brush and selling it, cedar brush, which people and companies use throughout the country for making Christmas decorations, and growing their own subsistence farming on their 40 acres. mostly vegetables, and that's how they got along. So he was a Depression era child, and that was the beginning of his life.
Wonderful. And for when we look at canonization causes, and it's so exciting to see some of these very modern causes moving along, because oftentimes we think of saints as being these people from faraway lands in Europe, saints or nuns, perhaps, or priests or nuns who have old paintings and old statues of them, and they almost don't even seem human. And then we have these modern cases like Irving Houle that are great examples for sainthood in our modern world today. Tell us a little bit, though, when we talk about saints, of course, we're always the Vatican care specifically about their lives of heroic virtue and how those virtues were demonstrated. Talk to us about the virtues of Irving Houle.
Exactly. The virtues of Irving were just his commitment, his love of the Eucharist and his commitment to the Church, which started when he was a child and he was injured in an accident on their farm and wasn't expected to survive. And he had a vision of Jesus during that night while he was in the hospital. And he awoke with a miraculous healing. He had ribs, pneumothorax, ribs in his lungs. And when they x-rayed him again the next morning, not expecting him to survive, everything was back in place. Hmm. And, of course, he had a vision of Jesus. So then he always said it was that event, which he fell off of a horse and injured himself, that led him to begin to think about Jesus and love Jesus, and that he felt he was called from that event, even though it was a childlike understanding, to somehow convert people, pray for the conversions of others, and to care about people so deeply and to love people throughout his life. And that continued through grade school and high school. When he was in high school, he'd make the 40-hour devotions every year, whatever church was having it. And he would go by himself. He said, "I didn't need anybody to go with him." In fact, he told me one time when he was a senior, he said, and he didn't say this judgmentally of anyone else, but he said, "I always wondered why I was the only high school student at Mass every day." Hmm. And, and he just had a love for the Eucharist. I've seen him cry during the consecration. And we were really, really good friends, and I was always excited to be in his company because he was such a beautiful, loving person. And yet he was a strong man, and that's why I think he would make a good saint. He took care of his wife and five kids. He was a manager. His career job was as a manager of a automotive parts manufacturing company. And he stayed strong throughout all the years he worked for them. He kept a picture of the Immaculate Heart of Mary and the Sacred Heart of Jesus and a crucifix on the wall. There were people that asked him, "What's this all about?" And he just told them straight up, his employer, "If they go, I go." Well, the employer did pretty well for himself, sold his company for about $47 million about 2 years ago. So, and Irving always attributed the success of that company to having the presence of the Blessed Mother and Jesus, our Lord Jesus, and the crucifix, a remembering of what he did for us on the cross, present in his workplace.
Amazing. We're talking today with Deacon Terry Saunders, President Moderator for the Cause for Francis Irving Houle from Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And when we talk about the cause moving along, of course, it's in its first stage, Servant of God, and we would like to see it move forward to Venerable, Blessed, and then Saint. How does the cause look right now as far as it processing along?
Well, it looks like we're in first gear, getting ready to shift into second gear to the Venerable. I'm expecting that this spring or so, we will diligently conduct the interviews of many witnesses who are still alive. I've named at least 100 to the diocese, and they will talk about how Irving cared about them, how he loved them, how his prayer was genuine, how he was a good family man, and how everybody knew that he was praying constantly and in the church all the time. They will talk about that, and I think when that heroic virtue, those type of statements end up at the Dicastery of Saints, that they will discern that he certainly is meets the venerable stage. And then we will have crossed that hurdle, and after that we're going to wait for some miracles to happen, the ones that God intends to do. And if it's his will, they'll be at the intercession of Irving Hull, and then we'll come blessed, and then one day will be the canonization.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Deacon Terry Saunders, for shedding some light on the life of Francis Irving Hull and the canonization process. Of course, people can seek his intercession for miracles even now. Is there a website or other place where people could get a prayer card or learn about the prayer so that they might seek his intercession?
Yes, there is. And the website is Irving Francis Hull, H-O-U-L-E, Irving Francis Hull. com. There's some information there. The phone number is there. In fact, I think the phone number is mine. And I would talk to anyone, and I do, to people all over the world about Irving. And there are many thousands praying for his intercession every day. And I hear a lot of medical miracles where there's medical intervention. And of course, the church won't accept that as one. But the miracles keep happening. And people are trusting that Irving is with Jesus in heaven, and that he talks to Jesus about us in our intercessory prayer.
Wonderful. Well, it's always good to have powerful intercessors on our side. That's to be sure. Well, we're so grateful to you, Deacon Terry Saunders, for talking to us about Francis Irving Hull, and maybe someday we'll see him on They Might Be Saints as well. Thanks so much, Deacon, for joining us on today's program.
And God bless all of you listening.
God bless. That was Deacon Terry Saunders joining us to talk about the future saint, Francis Irving Hull. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Jim Valois, the author of Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time, talking to us about Our Lady of Good Success, whose feast day is up and coming on February 2nd. And Deacon Terry Saunders talking to us about Francis Irving Hull. Check out my television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, every Saturday. And on the 15th of February at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be looking at Genazzano, one of history's most mysterious, miraculous images, appearing in 1467 when a beautiful fresco of the Virgin Mary and Christ Child was revealed descending from the cloud. So I'll be telling that story on Explore with the Miracle Hunter Saturday, February 15th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And for those people who want to visit Italy for themselves rather than just watch it on my shows, we're going to be doing a new pilgrimage coming up this summer. We'll be going to Italy to see the Marian apparition sites and visit the Duomo in Milan. We'll be visiting Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held, and walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the places where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. Then we'll be going to Florence, home to many great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello. We'll see Michelangelo's David and other works of art, as well as the site of the Marian apparitions of the seven holy founders of the Servites there. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican, and finish up with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. Find out more. You can join the pilgrimage at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter, and that'll be July 28th through August 4th. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.